It was early on a Monday morning back in May, and I was on the steps of our state capitol in Sacramento. I was part of a team from All Souls with Liz Titchener, with Sharon Roberts, and Luis Maldonado, and we were there to provide some support for a legislative effort for immigrants in this state. And as can often happen at events like this, it started with a rally, and at a certain point in the rally, the person at the microphone invited all clergy to come forward and stand up front. Now, these moments sometimes are worrisome for me because I always have this uncomfortable tension with being singled out and brought forward when it is very clear that there are many, many who are doing the work. But he implored us, and so I came forward, and Liz came forward, and we stood there, and a sign was thrust into my hands. I didn't even know if it was right side up at first. And then I made sure actually I could read it and knew what I was holding. And standing there in the shadow of this massive rotunda, I had this moment where I asked myself, am I actually ready for this? Our gospel passage today finds Jesus eating again. Now, this is particularly true in Luke's gospel. He eats all the time, right? It's part of why we think some called him a glutton and a drunkard. He was at table all the time. Today, we find him at the table of one of the Pharisees on the Sabbath, one of the religious leaders. And as he enters into the home, I had this sense that Jesus had really keen eyes, right? He was paying very close attention. And what he saw, we don't know how many, at least one, maybe two, maybe everybody, angling for just the right seat around the table. And so he takes the opportunity to cast a story alongside what is unfolding. The story he tells is of a Palestinian wedding feast, the gamos, and there are lots of people feasting, and Jesus uses this story as a kind of a warning. Now, I want you to imagine at these feasts, there are lots of reclining couches, right? That's how people ate, and they're all spread around, and at the center is one couch where the men of power and privilege sit. And so Jesus is supposing that we, the listener to this story, have put ourselves at this couch and somebody comes late. And the host has to say to us, oh, I'm so sorry, but could you move to that other couch over there because Mr. Wizengamot has chosen to arrive. So that's just embarrassing enough, but in a culture that is so deeply formed by honor and by shame, this is humiliating, right? When the social and political and economic relationships find their space, depending on where you sit, it is potentially devastating. And so what Jesus does is he offers some advice about where you should sit. But there's a passage in Proverbs about that. And so I don't think this is Jesus doing his best shot at Miss Manners or trying to help us win friends and influence people. Doesn't tend to be really into that. This is a parable. Right? We're told that in the text. And like, if this is like any other parable that Jesus tells, there's this one track that you're going on in the story, and then it flips. It inverts. and all of a sudden you're in a very different story. And that's what happens here, right? When Jesus says to his host in front of everybody, well, this is a nice meal and all, but you know who you really should have invited? And he goes on to talk about the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. Why? Why does he do this? Well, this is another occasion where the framers of our lectionary have actually done us a disservice. In this particular case, you'll notice in your bulletin that our gospel from Luke's 14th chapter starts at the first verse and then skips ahead to verse 7 through 14. Is anybody else curious about what verses 2 through 6 might contain? Well, I was. So, when you look at verses 2 through 6, you find that yes, it's the Sabbath, and yes, Jesus has been invited to this Pharisee's home for a meal. But just before he gets there, he notices a man outside of the home who our NRSV text tells us has dropsy. It's a form of edema, a severe building up of fluid and swelling can be very painful. And so he asks a question to the gathered group. He says, so is it lawful to cure this man on the Sabbath? Well, there's an answer to that question. And the answer, as it was often articulated, is no. It's the Sabbath. Jesus goes on to heal the man and send him away. And then he says to the assembled, if one of you had a child or an ox that fell down a well, would you not do everything you could to pull them back out? Essentially, if you have come to the table and you notice something wrong, deeply wrong, wouldn't you do something to make it right? So this then is the inversion. Because Jesus knows that we have people that we feel belong to us more than others. It could be our family. It could be our friends. It could be the people that we grew up in the same town with. It could be the people of our country. It could be the people who went to the same schools we went to, or dress like us, or look like us, or talk like us, or act like us. Often these are the people that we invite to the different tables that we sit around. And the problem is, Jesus says that often when we do this, we are looking for something in return. And this circle of repayment gets smaller and smaller. And Jesus says, build a bigger table. Or in the words of the scholar Emily Towns, rather than approaching the table seeking a blessing, we're to approach the table seeking to be a blessing. So the day at the state capitol continued. We were given a list of legislators or their staffs to be in conversation with. And to be honest, several of the conversations, it was pretty clear they were checking a box. Some of them, though, there was an exchange of information, and occasionally there was a moment where there really was an exchange, and something seemed to shift. For me, though, there was a clear moment that day. We were outside Lonnie Hancock's office, our state senator in this area, and a few of us started to gather advocates and others, and then there was a group of about a half a dozen women who were immigrants to the United States from Central America. And we gathered in one of the rooms in Senator Hancock's office and were around a table. Now, when I come to the table, especially that day, I came with all the authority I could muster, right? I was collared up. I was in my black suit. Now, when I come collared up in a my black suit, in our culture, people often pay attention to me before I speak a word. When I come to the table as a tall, white man with pepper and salt hair, all right, salt and pepper hair, and for some reason this beard, people pay attention differently. And so as people started saying where they were from, who they were, I realized what my job there that day was. I said my name, this parish I serve, and the role I serve within it. And then I stood back. I found the lowest place at that table so that others could find their rightful place at it. Now, one of the things that is primary to our Christian faith is this table. This, what could be known as one of the most radical tables ever known. And it's not simply radical because when we come to this table, we experience the real presence of God. There are other religions that participate in divine meals. But this is one of the most radical tables you will ever be around, because whenever you approach it, you will never participate in a transaction. All who approach this radical table, prince or pauper, receive the very same gift. It's why scholars believe that this text actually found its way into our gospel, because it was a reminder to those early Christian communities that this is how we gather. This is the primary way that we know who we belong to. It's not just the people who look like us or talk like us or act like us. This radical table is a reminder that we belong to everyone. To the cast out, to those who are called misfits, this table belongs to everyone. We belong to each other. And this table actually stands in for every table. All the tables that we find ourselves at, a kitchen table, a dining room table, a table in a school cafeteria, negotiating tables, tables of shareholders, shelter tables, any table where human beings are together, this table stands in. Now, for me, I hit the genetic jackpot, right? I am a tall, white man. And so, when I approach a table, I hear Jesus' teaching today, and I need to remember to find that lowest place so that I can make room for others. Now, for those of you who might have power and privilege like I do, this is actually a very conscious decision. Because it is so easy in our culture to look for people who look like us and figure that, well, we've got everybody we need. But Jesus is clear that we don't, that it can't be that way. And there are some who are fighting and need to remain strong and resolute just to find a space at the table. And may this table be a source of power and strength and courage. It's going to happen this week, friends. You're going to be somewhere. It may be in the most unlikely table that you can imagine, but you're going to be somewhere, and you're going to have this moment. And I want you to look around. I want you to pay attention. I want you to notice who's there and who's not. Who needs to be invited to the table? Which table needs to be made bigger so that someone can be there? This feast is not complete until everyone has found our seat.